Hello, GP Land. It's that man with a funny accent again. Welcome to another podcast from the Royal College of General Practitioners online learning environment. My name is Dirk Bilard, and I'm the medical director for e-learning at the college. Lipedema is one of those diagnoses you might have heard once or twice in your career, or even still remember from your dermatology lectures at university. But it's certainly not something that we see every day in our surgeries. Or is it? Different papers are quoting vastly different prevalence figures. Fonda et al. Suggests that up to 11% of women and post-pubertal girls are affected. Child et al. Proposes about 1 in 72,000, while Langenden et al. Think that 15% of all referrals to lymphedema clinics are actually lipedema cases. I think it's certainly underdiagnosed, and that's why we produced an online learning course in cooperation with Lipedema UK, a charity that wants to raise the profile of the syndrome. Last week, I spoke to Suzanne Evans from Lipedema UK, and at the beginning of our chat, asked to introduce herself.
Yes, hi, I'm Suzanne Evans. I'm the founder of Lipedema UK.
How long has Lipedema UK been around?
It's been around now for about 2.5 years.
And you founded Lipedema UK, why?
Well, I was pretty shocked when I got a diagnosis myself about 3 years ago, having suffered from this condition for 30 years and nobody had picked it up. I was so shocked that this had been the case, that, and I found that nobody was really doing anything about lipedema, that very few people knew about it. My GP had never heard about it. All those professionals I'd seen over the years in hospitals and so on and so forth had never heard about it. There didn't seem to be a national charity, so I thought that there should be one. And I figured that if anyone was going to do it, then I might as well do it myself. So that's why I set it up, really, to try and educate professionals about the condition and to support the mostly women who suffer from it.
You said you've been suffering with the condition for 30 years. 30 years ago, what did you notice? What was different about you compared to your peers?
I think the first thing I noticed is that I was at PE at school, for instance, and I noticed that my legs in particular seemed to be an awful lot bigger than those of the other girls, even those girls who, to all intents and purposes, actually were fatter than me, if I can use that word. And I remember thinking this was a little bit odd in one point, but not in others, because my mother had the same sort of problem, and she'd always complained about the size of her legs, and it seemed that mine were going the same way. So I didn't particularly think there was anything wrong. I just thought it was tough luck, really. It's family history. That's what happens. But I spent an awful lot of effort, put an awful lot of effort into trying to lose weight, because as we're all told, aren't we, that if you're fat, it's because you overeat. So I figured I must be eating too much, so I started to eat less. And I was on my first diet, probably aged about 15 when this started. I also started trying to exercise and do sorts of massage, anything to try and reduce the size of my thighs, which I absolutely hated. But of course, nothing worked. So eventually I thought, well, I'm obviously not trying hard enough, so you just redouble your efforts. And I look back on it now, and I think it was a complete waste of time. I've spent 30 years of my life dieting unnecessarily, exercising unnecessarily, over-exercising, which has caused other problems, I think, now. And, yes, it was just horrible, and just constantly suffering this shame of feeling that you were different, that you looked awful, not wanting to show my legs on in public. You know, I never went on a beach holiday. Swimming, which I now know is really good for the condition, is something that I just didn't do. I avoided it like the plague. And although lipedema is not a life-threatening condition, it certainly is very life-limiting for a lot of women, I think.
Apart from the obvious cosmetic symptoms that have haunted you for the last 30 years, were there other symptoms related to your limbs that were causing you problems as well?
Yes, I think like many women, the initial problem is the cosmetic side of it, but then you also feel a lot of pain. Now, women feel pain in very different ways. Some women feel a constant ache in their legs. I'm lucky I didn't have that, but I did find that if I bumped into something, or if I fell over, or if, for instance, I even had a massage, it would feel very, very painful. So for me, the pain is very much to the touch, and a slight dusting of my leg against the corner of a desk, for instance, that many people wouldn't notice, for me is very painful, and I'll have quite severe bruising for quite some time afterwards. So that was also very problematic.
So 30 years of obviously physical symptoms with pain in your legs and obvious changes to your cosmetic appearance, and for 30 years, no diagnosis. What was the usual answer that you got from your general practitioners?
You're fat. That sums it up in a nutshell. I remember there was one occasion when I specifically went to see my GP because my ankles were so painful to the touch, and a good friend of mine that does holistic massage had suggested that there was something wrong and I ought to go and see my GP. So I did, and she looked at them. She pressed them with her finger. She said, "Well, you haven't got lymphedema." She said, "Because the skin isn't pitting, it's popping right back up again." She said, "So it's just fat, nothing you can do about it." I said, "Well, I've tried to get rid of it. I've tried dieting. It doesn't work." And it was just, well, tough, you know, and there was almost this sense that, well, you're clearly not trying hard enough. So yes, it is, I'm afraid, something that GPs just think is the woman's own fault on the whole. We are taught this mantra from a very early age that if you get fat, it's purely because of what you eat, nothing else. Of course, I now know that's not true.
And I presume that at the time that you were seen by your GP, your body mass index was probably, due to all that dieting, not particularly high.
My body mass index has always been high. And a doctor would probably look at me, and most people look at me, they think I'm not overweight. But I step on the scales and people go, "Ah!" And there's this sort of shock of horror. Yes, you're overweight, because my BMI at that stage probably was around the 30 mark, which of course is technically obese. But to be fair, I think I've had over the last 30 years, because of this condition, a very unhealthy relationship with food. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And years of sort of dieting and not getting anywhere. I think, like many women, you kind of like give up a bit if it doesn't make any difference. So I am probably now, I suspect, even taking the lymphedema into consideration, probably about a stone overweight. But BMI, I'm afraid, is very misleading. And I'd say to a GP, if you see a woman whose BMI doesn't sort of match up with what you're seeing physically, someone that has a fairly slim upper body and perhaps fairly slim face, then you might want to think that there's something funny going on here. We know that BMI is completely unreliable for all sorts of reasons. It wouldn't work with a top-class athlete, for instance, and it doesn't really work with lymphedema either.
Mm-hmm. And then after 30 years, I presume, you were finally referred to a tertiary centre and given a diagnosis.
What actually happened was I had very bad knee pain. Again, this is something that people with lymphedema report quite frequently. And in my mid-30s, I developed osteoarthritis. And I was fortunate enough to be living in Southwest London, and I was diagnosed with osteoarthritis at St. George's Hospital in Southwest London. And the consultant who diagnosed me commented on the size of my ankles, and he said, "Have your ankles always been that swollen?" And I said to him, having seen the GP earlier, I said, "Oh, they're not swollen, they're just fat. There's nothing I can do about it. I've talked to my doctor," and he thankfully said, "Well, I think I'd like to get a second opinion on that. He thought I might have lymphedema." So he referred me to the lymphedema clinic at St. George's Hospital. There I was diagnosed with lymphedema, and hence my diagnosis and the birth of Lymphedema UK.
Mm-hmm.
Purely by chance.
And when you were given the diagnosis of lymphedema, I presume that you were told there is not much you can do. But did it change your attitude towards the problem anyway?
Yes, very mixed feelings, actually. On the one hand, it was an immense relief to know that there was nothing that I could do about this condition, that I wasn't just a fat, lazy, greedy, compulsive overeater, that this wasn't my fault. And that was a huge relief. On the other hand, I think I was actually, depressed is obviously too strong a word to put on it, but it felt quite low, I think, that, damn, there really isn't anything I can do about this. I'm stuck with it, and I've got to live with it. So it was a mixed blessing, in a way. And I'm sure that's the reaction that a lot of people have when they get a diagnosis, which I think is why it's so important to try and get women diagnosed early, when the symptoms first start to show, which is usually at puberty. So they can be told that they're possibly not overeating, that they don't have to diet, that it's about healthy eating, not dieting, and self-help techniques, because if you know that you have lymphedema, there are things that you can do. Swimming, that thing, as I said earlier, that we don't want to do, is fantastic because it acts like a sort of manual lymphatic drainage and can support tissues. And I found since I've started swimming, my condition has actually improved quite considerably. I think my legs look better and they feel better, and I don't think they're quite so painful. So it's just about looking after yourself. Wearing compression hosiery as well makes a huge difference and will prevent lipolymphedema developing. So it's good to know that you have it, and there are things that you can do. We can't expect any miracle cures, but at least getting a diagnosis, we can stop beating ourselves up and dieting and over-exercising, which of course causes more significant and comorbidities in the future.
Yeah, I think your comments reflect the majority of comments of the ladies that you interviewed for your survey, which was pretty much this mixed feeling of, on one hand, delight that finally you were giving a diagnosis, and on the other hand, frustration about not being able to change your appearance overnight.
It is quite sobering, that thought that you can't do anything, because most of these women have tried so hard and for so long to actually do something. But as I said, there is hope. There are things that you can do. And, you know, for me, in one sense, it was great to be liberated from this feeling, this need to diet. And now I take a much healthier attitude. I think I don't skip meals, or I try not to skip meals. I have a busy lifestyle style. Sometimes I forget. But it's about eating three meals a day healthily, not snacking ridiculously on stuff, but just being able to eat whatever I want in moderation. And that in itself can be very liberating.
And now that you've founded Lipedema UK, what's going to be next?
We have so many plans. I really don't know where to start. I think this is a massive problem. We don't know exactly how many women in Britain have lipedema because it's so underdiagnosed, so massively underdiagnosed. But I think just myself, when I'm out and about, and particularly when I'm in a group of other women, I just have a quick look round. And once you know the symptoms, you can spot them quite easily. And I'm pretty certain that we're looking at least one woman in every 20, 25 have this condition. I really think it's that prevalent, if not more. So it's a massive problem, and it's something we've really got to grips with. We obviously, the first thing is to get GPs to recognise it, and that's why we've commissioned the online learning course from the Royal College of GPs. That's very important. If we can get it recognised in primary care, then we can start to stop it developing and start to stop it getting worse. It's about that prevention agenda. That's very important to Lipedema UK. But there's also at the moment a lack of resources. When women get a diagnosis, they want help and support, and it's often difficult for them to find it. So we have all kinds of ideas for instance, setting up mobile clinics, perhaps even setting up a permanent clinic as well. But it's a huge job to be done. But for us primarily, it's if we can get women diagnosed and get this recognised and absolutely on the radar among health professionals, then we will be 60% of the way towards achieving our goals, if not more.
Well, certainly good luck from us.
Thank you.
As I said, you've been a great partner in producing this. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for doing it. I mean, I think it really will change women's lives for the better.
I think we all share the sentiment. If you are unsure what to look for in lipedema, fire up your favorite web browser and head over to the college's online learning environment and have a look at the course. We have already come to the end of this edition, and I would like to thank Suzanne Evans for her time. As usual, this podcast was made with Audacity, the free and open audio editor. The introductory music you heard was used with permission from Matt Bianco from their album Hideaway. My name is Dr. Doc Pilat. Goodbye.